when I went to the University of Virginia when I was 18 years old in 1962, I pretty much immediately became a philosophy major, and I, in reading the works of Plato, was where I got interested in this, because Plato was the first writer I ever read that took the question of life after death seriously. And since I respected this man, I mean, just as I'll always tell my students, you know, the first day of class is teaching Plato. This guy's writings have been in print continuously for 2,300 years, so obviously there's something to them. And the fact that this man that was so sublime in my thinking took this question seriously was the first I ever woke up to it. And at the very end of Plato's Republic, which I read my first year in college, there's a story of a warrior named Ur, who's believed dead on the battlefield, but comes to life when they're getting ready to dispose of his body. And that was in 62. Well, 3 years later, I heard that same story from a living human being, Dr. George Ritchie. I was a third-year philosophy student at that time, and George was a professor of psychiatry there at the University of Virginia. And I heard the same story I'd read in Plato 3 years before from a living human being. Then, to make a long story short, I got my PhD in philosophy in 69, and one of the first classes I taught there, actually a young man came up after class one day and related to me an identical story that I'd heard from George Ritchie 4 years before. So that made me realize there had to be more of them. And again, to make a long story short, by the time I went to medical school in 1972, I had quite a number of cases, and obviously being in medical school enabled me to find more, and since that time, I've literally talked to thousands of people from all over the world who've had these experiences when they came back from close calls with death.
And you also started studying past lives as well. You have had nine yourself, I believe, right?
Well, let's put it this way. Yeah, I back in about 85, I was teaching psychology, and there was a big fad on that at that time, and my students got real interested in the subject, so I just started doing it with my students just because of their own curiosity, and did quite a number of those, you know, guided students through these past life regressions. I got to tell you, George, though, I just have no way of making any inferences either way about that. I think that, I mean, it's just a fascinating phenomenon, and but who knows what it means.
Really. Absolutely. You continue to research near-death experiences. Over the years, have you seen a change with either people's stories about their near-death experiences or in really the ways they are studied?
Well, actually, I think there hasn't been much of a change in the stories. I think that's been pretty well documented, that even cases of near-death experiences that were recorded before my book was published by other investigators.
And that's the big one, Life After Life?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay.
Have subsequently been compared both to the ones I collected and also the ones that have been collected since my book was published, and there really doesn't seem to be that, you know, any significant difference. This seems to be a pretty constant kind of thing over a huge area of the world, and I think there's a little bit of exaggeration you hear on the part of the so-called skeptics who tell us that these things are different in different cultures around the world. I've talked with people from all over the world, and it really impresses me otherwise that given cultural difference in expression, or everybody everywhere says that no matter how many degrees they may have or how many languages they may speak, that they really just can't put these things into words, that they lie beyond our ability to put them into ordinary words. So naturally, they bring the framework of their cultural words and terms into it a little bit. But even with that, there's a remarkable uniformity all over the world where these things are described as people leaving their bodies and going on a sort of journey to some other place.
Are there any new scientists coming out into the forefront here to study this, or do you still stand alone out there with just...
As a matter of fact, since I published that book, there have been many, many studies done and in many parts of the world. Some years back in Holland, for example, over a period of years, over 600 patients who were resuscitated from cardiac arrest in hospitals in Holland were interviewed, and it was found that about 18% of them had these experiences. They've been studied in Great Britain, in Japan. I even have a colleague down in Africa who has interviewed patients down there with near-death experiences, and I think that there's pretty much world over a kind of uniformity in them.
Do those nine common experiences that continued to show up during the study that you did of the, 150-some people originally, mm-hmm. do those nine experiences still keep coming up as well?
They absolutely do, George. People tell us that when their heart stops beating, they leave their bodies, and they say they drift through a tunnel into a brilliant light. They see relatives or friends of theirs who have passed away. They're in spirit form. They say that they feel permeated almost by love, peace, joy, and this brilliant light that's full of love and comfort. They undergo what we call panoramic memory, where they see their whole life projected around them in a sort of instantaneous hologram. They see everything they've ever done. They tell us that very often when they learn that they have to come back, they don't want to come back. They want to stay in that light. And then when they return, they tell us that what they've learned from their experiences, that from their point of view anyway, that this is a transition into some other kind of realm of being, so that they're convinced that there's a life after death.